everyone, G Money here, futurist disruptor ape, and your source for all things NFT. You're tuning into the Cutting Edge podcast, where we discuss the importance of the emerging NFT market with culture's most influential people. Whether you want to know about the next biggest drops or just want to know the basics of where to start, the Cutting Edge can help. If you like what you hear, please rate, review, and subscribe. Hey everyone, welcome to the Cutting Edge podcast where culture meets crypto. Today we have an AI researcher with a PhD in machine learning and computer vision. He entered the NFT space about a year ago and started minting AI art, experimenting and getting to know the space. A couple months later, he launched Animetas together with Pixel Gustavo. Focused on innovation and taking this space forward using cool tech, he founded GM420, an innovation incubator aiming to give people tools to explore new use cases in NFTs and blockchain. Cyber is a friend and colleague, and for full disclosure, I am honored to be an advisor in GM420 and thrilled to have what will be a fascinating conversation. Please welcome Cyber. Cyber, what's going on, man? How are you?
Great, great. How are you, G?
Good. How's everything? You know, there's a couple of things that I know we're going to discuss throughout the podcast, but I just want to start by kind of just how we met, right? Like it was pretty much like a cold DM. I believe you DM'd me and you were telling me about the Picasso punks, right?
Punkassos.
Yes, that's what it was. And I remember we were talking about it and then we got on a call. And, you know, we were discussing, you know, you were telling me a lot about your background and the things that you were working on. And, you know, like this has been, you know, we've known it's about a year. It was around this time last year that we first started discussing it. So I guess why don't we just start with a little bit about your background and then, you know, professionally, like what's your background is, and then how you ended up in NFTs.
Basically, I come from tech. I mean, it's been what I'm doing for the last, I don't know, 15 years or so. Like, I always loved, thinking about new revolutions in tech and you know, like innovative stuff, etc. Like a bit about my background, I've always been in electrical engineering. Once I finished my bachelor degree, I decided to go all in into computer vision and machine learning, because I believe that, like, seeing a lot of examples of what one can do with this tech, it felt like magic for once. Except that, I mean, I loved seeing, like, I used to work a lot with signal processing, etc., and images, and you know, like analyzing images and processing images and manipulating them, it gives you a lot of immediate feedback on what you're doing. And I just fell in love with that. I mean, doing like manipulations on images and understanding like scenes only from visual input, etc. I felt that it's an entirely new frontier that I can research and learn about. And then like what I did in my master's degree and PhD was basically implementing those technologies and novelties into problems in classical optics and a lot of different fields like that, using a lot of innovations that me and my colleagues at the lab and work came up with.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, I agree with you, right? Like, obviously, if you're going towards machine learning and computer vision, that's literally like the cutting edge of the cutting edge. So I assume, so how did you find out about NFTs? And I assume you were attracted to them because, you know, you do like that cutting edge, and NFTs are the cutting edge of like crypto tech.
About a year and a few months ago, my friend who was a huge NBA fan, I'm a huge NBA fan as well, told me about NBA Top Shot. And like a lot of people at that time, beginning of 2021, we got in, like, ask ourselves, what is this new technology, like owning digital assets, etc. And I thought, like, once I looked at it once, I thought, well, it's not, I mean, what will I do with something I can watch on YouTube, like a lot of us probably asked once we found out about NFTs. And then like after I owned the first Top Shot moment, I just like studied a lot about like what are NFTs, and it took me a while to understand like why people are so excited about CryptoPunks, etc. And once it clicked, once the technology, the tech innovations and the different use cases that I started thinking about, once they clicked, I knew that it's like it's a huge revolution. And basically, like for me, I think that it's our generational revolution. Like I wasn't old enough to do something in the dot-com bubble at the beginning of the century. And now I'm like, wow, okay, I'm not missing that chance.
Right, yeah. And so, side note, I remember when we were first talking, I don't remember if it was the first combo that we actually had on voice, but I remember you saying, it's like, you know, I don't have a CryptoPunk yet, right? Like, I specifically remember that, where you're like, I'm going, you're like, you know, your tenacity is incredible, right? Because you're like, I will have one. I don't have one yet, but I will. And I think you might have been the first person. You were the first person on the what was it? The punk rental page, right? Where you rent somebody's punk for like a week or two or something.
Yeah, yeah, right. From Copper Car, yeah. Ones like a few dozens, you know, of things, yeah.
Yeah, and so like, you know, like, so my one question I have is, are you still doing the machine learning and the computer vision stuff, or are you focused full time on NFTs?
So I am doing still machine learning and computer vision stuff, because I mean, researching is like one of my passions. I believe in like our world, like the modern world, is a lot about interdisciplinary stuff, etc. And I think like ideas from one field that are projected to another are super important. And like myself, like learning a lot about, it could be machine learning, it could be art, it could be like NFTs, it could be blockchain in general. I mean, it gives me a lot of, you know, like food for thought. And for me, I mean, that's the thing that makes the difference.
Right. Yeah, no, and I really agree with that. I'll say this is, I think you're up like all the time. You know, I don't think I ever like DM you and like more than like 3 hours goes by until you respond. So I will say that like you're always up, you're always like doing cool shit. And I know like this, like our conversations have been going on for a year, right? Where you would always like hit me up with like the cool stuff that you're working on, right? And you know, after you did the Punkassos, you were like, okay, like I want to do something more. Like I want to do my own project. And that was where, you know, you came up with Animetas. Can you talk about that, that journey a little bit?
Yeah. So I believe mainly in originality, right? And I think that it's super important to be original in the space. And like getting into the space, I thought it learning a bit about doing a project and stuff like that. So Punkasso was a good experience. And also like, I'm pretty glad to say that I entered early enough to be able to talk directly to people who've been in the space since 2017 or whatever. And also with you, obviously. And like punks back then were like the lords of the mansion, right? So there were like OGs in the NFT space, and it really taught me a lot. And after that, I mean, doing the derivative that is related to AI and punks, Punkassos, I thought, well, I don't want to limit myself to things that are already existing in the space and like creating derivatives, etc. And I wanted to do something original of my own. And back then, so there's Gustavo, Pixel Gustavo, was an amazing pixel artist, which I really loved for a few years now. I love his work. Actually, like I'm looking right now at this cool painting that he made me for my birthday. And basically, what I wanted to do is to create a world where I can utilize a collection and a community to basically experiment. So this world, and I'll like give centers or two about it. So when we started thinking about Animetas, we wanted to do something that was a bit different than everything we saw in the space back then. So it could be CryptoPunks or Bored Apes or whatever. And we wanted to do something that is like super complex in terms of trade. So Animetas has like over 4,000 trades. And we wanted to make a story that will allow people to really connect with the characters. So basically it was like, it's really far in the future and Earth is no longer habitable for the humankind. And a group of 10,101 pioneers decided to mint their brains onto the Ethereum blockchain. And their projection inside this blockchain is the Animetas. And they live in a world, a virtual world called the Animetaverse. And there, like, everyone could make their own story, like the story for their character, etc. And there is like this feeling of it's a cyberpunk, retro futuristic world, which really connects with the things that Gustavo and I love, like, you know, like those 90s movies, like Demolition Man or The Fifth Element or whatever, and also like those really fun, and I think we'll talk about it later too, retro, you know, like 90s video games or arcade machines or whatever. So that vibes really well with when we grew up and, you know, like a lot of nostalgia, etc. And we wanted to really push the boundaries in how complex a collection could be and what you can do with it, taking it forward.
Right. And so then like, what's the status of that collection now? And like, I guess if you could share a couple things about that, where that collection is now and what the future holds for it.
So basically, the thing I love about Animetas is that it has this really strong and devoted community that really takes it to being a very decentralized brand, right? So we're not the only ones that are creating content. I mean, that the collection has done extremely well. I think it was one of the most historic mints in NFTs till now. I mean, it minted in all the collection minted in like less than 2 minutes or something like that back in July 31st. And now 7 months later, I mean, I feel that we have so much that we've already done. So games that are about to be launched, released unique rides for each of the Animetas, like hover cars. That's like the thing we imagined for this Animetaverse. We released a theme song for each Animeta, like a unique one made by Triple O Studios, which is super cool and super exciting. And like going forward, I mean, we have a lot of participation from the community. So like this month, we have the first book out of a trilogy of about one character, like one of the blockchain zombies. So it's an 800 pages book, the first one of
800.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. I read it recently, and I mean that's one author from the community and Anon, obviously, and we're going to drop it later this month. And I think like so this thing, and we have like a few subgroups that are working on comic strips for Animetas and a lot of cool stuff like that. That I mean, besides support from the team, it's completely parallel to our efforts. And I think that it shows, like for me, so that's the last thing I'll say about it. But for me, like, for example, Disney taking over the Star Wars franchise, it was a bit disappointing to see the direction that they took for this franchise. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to have like this group of people that decides together in a decentralized way, like a DAO or something like that, and that's where we're going, what could be like lore or fan fiction of our universe, like the stories that we're telling, and what could be minted, for example, as canon, you know, like the stuff that is the absolute truth of the Animetaverse. And I thought it's really amazing to see like how many people want to participate and like taking this forward. That's where I see Animetas, like a world that is a creature that is ever evolving and allowing people to take control over the collection itself and where it's going and the stories. And because I think basically, and that's, I mean, we'll talk about it later once we get to what we're doing together, but I feel that for me, NFTs are basically digital toys, right? I mean, it's a huge playground for adults. And I think a lot of that is based on like fantasies that you create together as a community and as individuals, and telling stories, et cetera. And that's the thing that makes brands unique, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's really cool. So I guess, you know, now in the last 7 months, you know, as a founder, what are some of the key learnings that you would share that you wish you knew when you were first starting out?
One of the main things that I learned, and I think like I would have changed that, is that at the beginning, like I used to take opinions of people very seriously. Like if someone was not super happy about something we've done or whatever, I really like took it personally and tried to change that and tried to make everyone happy all the time, right? And it was very time consuming. And I think like I have my own vision for Anymetas and for all the projects that I'm doing. And obviously it can change. And I think, as I said, it's an ever evolving project. But like for me, the main thing that the main take that I have is that if I started a new project now, I'd think, okay, that's what I want to do. If someone is not happy about it, they can not mint it or sell it or whatever. But I think that what I'm doing is right. And, you know, like that's
right. Yeah, no, I think that's super important. I've been experiencing that myself. Like, you know, as I've gotten like a bigger following, like, you know, you're not going to make everybody happy all the time. And mm-hmm. you know, kind of being okay with that, right? Like, I think that's like a skill that you kind of learn sometimes, right? So I think that's really important, because I think, especially as a founder, right? Like to your point, is like you want everybody to like the project, right? But at some point, too, you don't want to change your vision just so that like it could be liked by like an extra subset of vocal people, right?
So I agree
with that. So, you know, one of the things I love about you is the fact that like you're always thinking, you're always ideating. Like, you know, over the last year, we've had dozens of conversations where like you come to me where you're like, I have this idea. And, you know, like, and I'm like, all right, cool. And like, we think about it a little bit, you know, not all of them work, but like, you know, it's just like, I just have really enjoyed that. And so like, because you're always thinking about things, as blockchain is making faster and faster technological advancements, what are the areas of opportunity, or let's call them white spaces, that jump out at you?
I think that as blockchain takes really a larger portion in our day-to-day, and obviously with us, it's like almost 100%, right? But I think that a lot of things are going to change, I think, in the relationship between digital and physical assets, and things that, so like, for example, I think like the in the beginning of the century, it was like there was like a huge digital, right, a revolution. Like every records that we had have gone like onto huge cloud servers or whatever. And I think that like we're still in this in between periods where, okay, we have our digital assets like in a centralized place, like a server or whatever, but we don't really own them. And I think that that's something that I see as an opportunity, because it started with art, right? And it started with things that we can do on chain. I don't know, like art blocks started with this trend, obviously, and a few others. But I think like the next big step will be like our records being really on chain and you know, like really belong to us, or like, you know, like in terms of like provenance and stuff like that. That's the main opportunities that I see in the next few years. And also I think like that's something that I'm really excited about, and maybe we'll talk about it here too, but I think that looking at AI at the moment, right? So a lot of times we have this centralized server that we interact with. You know, it could be like bot that helps us, I don't know, shop, or it could be like GANs that help us create cool art or whatever. And I think like taking that and making that decentralized, that could make a lot of difference in what we're doing on the blockchain, because it could be like used for, I don't know, translation. It could be used for a lot of stuff that will be like, the algorithm can learn from a lot of people without a lot of you know, like biases. Because like, for example, I see a lot of, you know, like, I think like, for example, let's take facial recognition algorithms, right? So when they're centralized, right? So there is a lot of bias in the data sets that you train the networks with or whatever. And biases are usually bad for, you know, like subgroups of people all over the world. Right. And I think like in that case, like decentralization could do a lot of good for us as humanity.
Right. Okay, cool. That makes sense. And so then, you know, as you've been looking around and you alluded to it, right, about stuff going on chain is, and in one of the conversations that we had, it really piqued my interest, because I agree with you. I think that there is this massive, there's going to be this massive need for stuff being more and more on chain, right, in decentralized manners.
Yeah.
So can you explain, I guess, what is GM420? What is it that the opportunity set that you're trying to do there, and explain a little bit to the audience about exactly what that project is.
Cool. So GM420 is basically my innovation incubator, which I'm super glad that you wanted to be an advisor and be onboarded into this amazing, I don't know, journey. And I think like what I want to do in all the stuff that I'm doing, like in my life, is to allow people, platforms, and I don't know, like proofs of concept that will allow them to create and to take things further. And GM420, in that sense, so we've started with, I'll tell a bit of background. So I was like, when Loot came out, the collection, I remember I had this conversation with you about it. And I didn't really understand the appeal, but I was fascinated by the tech that they use, because it was practically like taking on-chain text, making it as a very simple SVG, and presenting that everything was on chain and very, very, very simple. And I started thinking about, okay, so if they can do it with text, maybe we can play a bit with those SVGs, which is a format I didn't know before that. If anyone in the audience doesn't know what it is, so it's scalable vector graphics that allow you to like change scales quite easily. And I thought, okay, so I loved, as a person that grew up in the 90s, I loved ASCII art, etc. And I thought, okay, so if they can do text, maybe we can do like a generative collection of ASCII art. It could be, so I wanted to make it like a dog's collection called the Husky or Husky ASCII or whatever.
I will say this, you're also, sorry, and I don't mean to interrupt you, you are like the king of puns. Like, you always come up with the best puns.
Yeah.
Everything. So I just,
yeah. I mean, I think that I do like 10% of my time is you know, like work and NFTs, etc. And 90% of my time I'm thinking about puns. Yeah, that's like my favorite thing to do. And I think that like once we started like really exploring the format, we discovered that it has like major potential in two terms. The first one is what we can do with it in terms of like graphics and animation, right? So that's one thing. And the second thing is that people, like because size of files doesn't really matter today, where we have so many storage places like cloud services, et cetera, people didn't really study how we can compress SVG files. And in the scenario of the blockchain where size does matter, because everything we want to mint or upload or whatever costs us money, and that's why most collections are using IPFS and not storing directly on chain. So compression became quite crucial. And what we've done is that we took like a month or two to really research what we can do in this format in terms of compression. And we had amazing discoveries that, in my opinion, can completely change the game in terms of art and provenance and whatever, because I believe that every artist, if they had the option, they'd prefer to put their art on chain and not on an IPFS.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, like let's go over that a little bit, because I remember the first time we spoke about this, I was like, holy shit. I'm like, you know what, you know, and admittedly, like I put you in touch with a couple of people that are much more technical than I am to kind of be like, all right, like, let's make sure that this is real. And you know, they came back, were like, yeah, like, you know, this is worth looking into. And so let's go over that, right? Because I don't know the exact percentages, but like, as an example, right? Like, what can you give us some examples of like the compression percentage and like what the size is, original file, then what it went down to, and like what, you know, that it gets stored on chain?
Yeah. So basically, as I said, my favorite artist is Pixel Gustavo, and I was happy to learn that he did some experimenting with SVGs and not only pixel art. So I asked him for a few SVGs that he had to start working on and see if we can compress them. It could be like, so I'll tell a bit about the compression, like really 30,000 feet, right? Something really simple. But basically, what we're doing in most images, there are a lot of repetitions, right? They could be in different scale or different locations or whatever. So let's say, for example, I'm looking at your punk right now because we're talking. So the eyes are just mirror of each other, right? And the knit cap, same. The entire face actually is a mirror. So we can just represent it like the half of the size, right? And a lot like the two nostrils are the same as the eyes, right? So there are a lot of stuff that you can do in terms of like resemblance in the image that you can make it, compress it and make it smaller, especially in SVGs where you really, it's like coding the image like pixel, right? Right. And that's one thing, like that's the basic compression that we've done. And we found a lot of ways as myself, obviously I'm an expert in computer vision, and my friend who I worked with on this stack is an expert in compression and encryption and a lot of stuff like that. So we found a lot of new and exciting ways to compress the image itself, right? The visual content. And then we came up with also with minification techniques, which means that we took the text that creates, like on the contract that creates the image, and found ways to really compress it as well, like making sure that we're eliminating specific, it could be tabs or spaces or a lot of different stuff like that. I won't get too much into detail. But what we found out is that we can take images that could have been like, I don't know, 100 kilobytes or even more than that, and make them like into 5 kilobytes or 10 kilobytes or whatever. And like, it could go from 5x smaller to 100 times x smaller, right? And the cool thing about it is that it also helps like generative art, because even though you want, let's say you want to make a 10K drop, right? That's really popular these days. So you only need to encode the layer or whatever once, and you can make as many images as you want, but it will, like the size will be the same, it won't change.
Right So you're saying like each attribute would be like its own layer
that exactly
take up more space.
Yeah, and also the cool thing there is that like different attributes could also be compressed into like similar, with those similarities as well. you know, like, let's say, I don't know, you have, like your ape or whatever. So the knit cap could be in a different color, right? But it's still the same attribute, like when we code it.
Right, right. Cool. No, I mean, I think that's super sick, right? And I understood that the first time we spoke about it, and I was like, yeah, like this is incredible. If you're minting anything, you should want to use this compression technology, right? Like, I don't think that everything can be on chain just yet, but this is definitely like a really good step in the right direction, right? For like,
I agree.
A lot of things, right? So, yeah, thank you. I appreciate you kind of going and explaining the technology in layman's terms for most of the people that are listening to this. So then, like, let's kind of get into the part where, you know, what are you doing to kind of showcase it, right? Like, I know we've been working on this drop now for a couple months now, and having discussions back and forth and figuring things out. And so, like, what is it that is coming, right? What is the drop? And then also, what are you hoping to showcase with it?
I want to show people that, like, I think people have done really amazing things on chain or partially on chain or whatever. Like, I'm a huge fan of Snowflow and RBlocks, etc. And I wanted to show what's the next step that we can take it to, right? So, like, making our own chain, like a frame on chain, is one thing, and a generative collection is, like, obviously for us it's the same thing. But making something that is more unique and seems like, oh my God, I can't believe it's on chain, right? And I'm sure that's what happened the first time you saw what we've made. So what we're trying to showcase is that we want to compress an entire video game, an entire retro 90s video game into, like, to be entirely on chain inside the NFT, right? Inside the contract. The entire game is inside the contract, all the graphics, all the code, et cetera, et cetera. And for that, we've done like a lot of cool stuff that, I mean, was never done before in NFTs. And I think, like, also outside of NFTs.
Yeah. So let's get into that a little bit. So is that file is not an SVG file, right? Or is it?
Right, right. So
yeah, so the compression technology works for not just SVGs, but other file formats.
Right, right. So the cool thing about our tech is that we compress two things. So we compress the graphics, right, the SVGs themselves, and we also compress the code that runs them. So in our case, like in the game we've built, and we're going to talk about it in a few minutes, but we've built a game in JavaScript where we've done a couple of things. So we've made the entire JavaScript file not independent of any other package or whatever. Like, the entire code of the game sits inside the contract. And the cool thing is that one of the most compressible things you can find is text. And we found a lot of cool ways to compress the text, so it will include like the code for the game itself, and inside it we'll also include the graphics.
Right. Okay. That's really cool and that's really dope. I mean, I just think like the possibilities for this are like endless, right? So, which is why I'm like super excited about it. So, like, let's get into the game itself. So, you know, it's a retro 90s game. I'm also like an old school person in the industry. So, like, I grew up playing this game. So what's the game and you know, what are the features of it?
So we're calling it the G-Money Brick Breaker, right? So it's a really cool Brick Breaker game with all the stuff we remember from our childhood, like the, I don't know, ball glued to the paddle, right? And you know, like breaking the brick, getting power ups, whatever, a ball made of iron or fire or whatever. So a lot of stuff like that, right? And it's going to be like the entire game was basically like the first version of it that we've made was about like, I don't know, like almost 1 megabyte, right? And now the drop is going to be because we've made so many modifications and changes. The entire generative drop of 2,500 different levels, let's say generative levels of the game, of the Brutberger game, are going to be a total of about 11 kilobytes, right, on the contract. And that's in my opinion, huge. I mean, I loved working on that. I love that we can add all those power-ups and whatever to create a really fun game. I mean, you and your team, you've tried to play that. I mean, it's really cool and really fun. And the most awesome thing, in my opinion, is that we knew, we found ways to incorporate your ape and your logo inside the game itself. So people will see that when it drops, but you can see your ape spontaneously like get from many angles of the screen saying LFG or GM or whatever. And I think that's really cool because like besides having, the compression for SVGs, we also invented this technique that will allow us to really to render the entire screen and the entire gameplay really fast. So once the browser reads the code and the SVGs, it automatically turns them back to PNGs. So it would be easier for it to render it. It creates like a really flowing gameplay and a very fun experience.
Man, that is so technical. It's way above my pay grade. It's I really appreciate you explaining that, right? Like I love it. I love the concept. You mentioned that there are 2,500 generative levels. So like if I play and I don't die, I can play 2,500 levels, you're saying?
So basically, what we're planning to do is to generate like for each, like there will be 2,500 different pieces, right? In this drop, and each piece, we haven't planned yet. Like it could be whatever we want, right? But we haven't planned yet how many levels there will be until you return to the basic one. But there will be differences in difficulty, and the power ups that you're gonna get, etc. So yeah, you will be able to play a lot of different levels in your own piece, right?
So then let's take that one step further, right? And so then what happens if I get a high score?
So if you get a high score, and I don't want to give away too much of what we're planning, but if you do get a high score, then you can ride that high score on a decentralized leaderboard.
Right, and that's on chain.
The leaderboard will be on chain. The thing is, in this leaderboard, is that we haven't quite found a way to make it like bulletproof in terms of security, because if you own the piece, then it would be really hard or maybe even impossible to make you mint like on the leaderboard on the blockchain to make you mint the real score and not something you made up. But that's, I think that's also cool because when we were kids playing the arcade machines, you always came up with this. Cool names or curses or it could be fun.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that to me, the exciting thing about this is that it is such a great proof of concept, right? Of the compression tech, right? The compression, that's 99% compression, right? From one megabyte to 10 kilobytes. That's a huge, huge compression stack. So to me, it's that is the most interesting part about it to me. And obviously the gaming part is a fun component to it. What other formats or use cases do you foresee the compression tech being applicable to?
Yeah, so basically, we started with SVGs, obviously, and we went on to text, which means that we can do it for records, etc. And I'll touch a bit about it more in a few minutes, because that's one of the as a researcher in the academy, I have a lot of ideas about a new mechanism for reviewing papers, etc. So that could be on chain. But I think at the moment, I'm very excited about what we can do with GIFs, because GIFs are also like SVGs. There are also like the dynamic ones actually are also something that wasn't really studied for like for compression reasons. And like I'm super excited about like I think I sent it to you, but like looking at pieces by Xcopy or whatever, like thinking about taking Xcopy and making an on-chain drop because we can make the GIF very small. That could be a huge step for people making dynamic and animated art. But I think like the major use case that I see, so except like being able to like maybe even open source this technology or whatever, I don't know, to allow various minting apps to allow people to make art on chain, etc. I think that one of the major use cases is records, right? So it could be, I mean, I want to start with something like papers, like academic papers, right? Where you can really, a lot of the time, like in the academy, a lot of the time you have to make sure that you're the first one who made something or you know, like came to a proof of concept, etc. Because I mean, a lot of the times, different labs are studying the same thing, etc. And being able to prove that you were the first one to mint a specific idea, proof of concept, whatever on the blockchain, that could be a huge game changer. But not only that. I mean, I feel that today, and I'm a decentralization maxi, right? So I feel that today, like the high-end magazines like Nature, Science, whatever. So they have like this really old school centralized reviewing process where many times papers get in because of the name, and sometimes they even have like mistakes, etc. But you can change that, and that's I think something that should be changed. It should be more decentralized, and I think that creating an entire system that will store those the papers and records and comments and point out the mistakes, etc. on chain, that could be something, I mean, really revolutionary.
Right. Yeah. No. I think that I know we jammed on this subject too, and I don't come from the, let's say, the academia background. I only finished my major in college, and so I didn't go to grad school. So I didn't spend as much. I haven't spent that much time in front of these like academic systems and stuff as you have. But I definitely agree with you. Right? Is like you want to have that, like, you know, it's like if you're, especially when you're on the cutting edge of tech, right, and the cutting edge of research, like. A lot of times, and this happened multiple times throughout history, right? Like even when the Manhattan Project was happening in New York or in the States, Germany was really close to developing an atom bomb at the same time, right? Yet they obviously weren't sharing information. So a lot of like good ideas like sprout up at around the same time. And it's kind of like that race to the finish of like who publishes it first type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so So thank you for sharing like all that info on the tech and the drop. Is there anything else you want to talk about with regards to the technology itself and like the plans for GM420 and what you plan on doing with it?
Like my dream is really to allow everyone to be able to compress stuff and like make new use cases, things that obviously like the. Everyone has ideas, and as you said, like we want to proliferate those ideas and give people tools to do amazing stuff that we didn't think about. So I want to make sure that everyone will be able to use this tech. That's one direction I want to take it. So it will be like a few drops with artists and different types of drops of the art, etc. And I think like the next thing. So. I do have a cool POC that I started working on where we can do an on-chain usage or at least a decentralized usage of AI. And that's something I do want to dabble with this platform. That's basically that for now.
Have you looked at Alter State Machine or Aletheia yet?
No.
No, so they're doing cool stuff with AI. We can talk about that offline, but like I thought it was a really you'll probably be interested in it, especially with your background.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, and you know, like I know I want to be cognizant of your time. We're coming up on the hour. As you've been building out your teams, you've now, you know, you're building out this team, you built out the Animatus team. I'm super curious, and I'm sure people are, is how have you found partners to help you, that complement you? What do you look for in individuals when you're hiring? Like what are the key components that you're really looking for? And after you answer that, I'm going to answer one of my things that like really impresses me about you and why like I ultimately wanted to for a while now wanting to have done something with you.
Cool. So first of all, thanks. And the second thing is that like when I'm looking for partners, I'm looking specifically for two things. The first one is that. So I'm a dreamer, right? I love dreaming about ideas that might be impossible or whatever. And I want to take on this journey, like people that are also dreamers, right? So that's one thing. Uh-huh. And people that can, you know, like work in the pace that I'm working in. It's not that easy. and I think that, and I want to take people that you know, like, don't take no for an answer. Like, you know, they want to make stuff happen. You know, like the like this you know like can do attitude, etc. That's one of the major things I'm looking at. And the second thing is that I want people that like I'm looking for people that are like really like the other side of the spectrum that are very like methodical and, you know, like because I'm a dreamer, I a lot of times I need like, basically that's my wife, usually someone that will, you know, like pull me back to the ground and tell me, okay, that's basically what I'm looking for when I'm hiring the two different things. And I think like the main thing is that I want people that are super excited. Right. That's like the main thing, because I think like if you're like a bit burned out or whatever, so that's okay too. But I want people that always think about how to take the space forward, because when I'm looking on the space, I as I said, I want to give people tools and I want to make new and exciting stuff. And you need people that are like willing to run with you.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think to add to your first point about people that can't take no for that won't take no for an answer. Going back to my comments, like at the top of the interview, right, is like one of the things that always impresses me about you is like your grit and your tenacity. Like we'll be talking and like I might like be traveling or something and I don't reply for like 12 hours and like I'll come back and like there'll be like 10 or 15 messages from you. Like you literally won't take no for an answer. And like, I think that's very respectful. And I, you know, it's very interesting because I wanted to ask you about this is like, I noticed that it happens more often with Israelis than it does than with any other people that I deal with. Is, do you think that is part of like Israeli culture a little bit?
Yeah, so I think that it is, you know, like there's...
I love it. I think it's great, right? Because it's like, again, like sometimes I get so busy that I'm like, oh shit, like I want to respond. And then like just other shit comes up. And then like you just sometimes, you know, it's like that thing, I don't know, we say it in the States where like the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? Where it's like, you know, you have to kind of like be there. And, you know, like if you're smart and you're hardworking and like, I like believe in your vision and all the things that you want to work for. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I want to be working with you. And I, like I said, I just really respect that tenacity. Whereas I think a lot of people will stop following up, right? Will be like, oh, well, this guy didn't answer like once. So like yeah. Him, right. And it's just kind of just realizing that's like, you know, like everybody's busy, right? Like even when I message you, like, you've got a million things in the air. Like, you know, I think you're probably one of the few people in the space that I know works like harder than me. Cause you're always like doing cool shit. You're always around and like pushing the space forward. So I personally think that is like super important. And it sometimes it's discounted a little too much, I would think.
Yes. So basically, I think that I don't know any other way. I mean, that's like the main thing. That is not that I'm doing that, you know, like on purpose or like deliberately or whatever. I mean, yeah, it's part of our culture and it's like this Israeli chutzpah or whatever you want to call it, right? But I think that like for us, I mean, I can tell you that. In Israel, like if you didn't reply on Telegram or WhatsApp or whatever, but the person saw that you have like those two blue check marks or whatever, then they're like, oh my God, I know that you've seen the message. So why are you answering, right? So that's usually how it is here. And I know that people in America aren't quite used to that, but like sometimes I'm like, okay, but that's the only way I know how to, you know, like do stuff. So
right. No, that's awesome. I love it. You know, let me get you two more questions, and then I'll get you out of here. So Web3, as we all know, can be highly collaborative, and it promotes decentralization, which you just said you're a decentralization maxi. Can you talk about why compression technology is so important to help empower individuals?
So I think that in terms of this compression technology, a lot of people, like, I believe that components should be like stored on the same place, right? And not like a lot of different, like, you know, like it makes things simpler to have everything like on a contract, right? And I'm looking at like, I don't know, minting platforms or whatever, and even like artists or whatnot. And like, even now, if they want to make a drop, they have to, you know, like upload the files to IPFS, right? And make the contract and whatever. And they use, I think, those, a lot of not so very robust contracts or platforms or whatever. And I think that like taking that and make and putting it into the same place, like using compressed art or whatever, compressed files or whatever, that could really go a long way for artists that are new to the space and make it easier for them. Because I mean, we're all about making things simple, right? Because if it, you know, like even opening a MetaMask or buying Ethereum, that's a huge step for people. So like making a new NFT, oh wow, that could be really hard for people and be a major obstacle barrier in entering this space. And I think like in Web3 in general, so compression will be super important when it comes to records, as I said, like personal records or even enriching the data that you have, like for example on your ENS domain or whatever. Like if you wanted your ENS domain to be gmoney.eth, an ape, disruptor and futurist or like whatever, then it could be really easy to do that with compression because it would cost less, etc.
Right. And so then just two things. One is how does the tech work on JPEGs right now?
So the thing about JPEGs at the moment, and I don't know, like we haven't got into it, into studying it, because JPEGs are a format that is like hugely compressed already, right? So, so I don't know if the margin, you know, like extra compression that we can make is worth it.
Right.
But that's something we'll have to start studying soon.
Right. All right. Cool. And then two is, I mean, as I was having this conversation with you, have you seen Silicon Valley, the show?
Of course.
This reminds me a little bit of like Pied Piper a little bit, right? With like the compression tech.
What are
your thoughts on that? You know, I just think it's a funny similarity. That's all.
So I think like the episode where they came up with like whatever compression, that's one of the funniest things I've seen on TV.
I agree. I knew exactly the scene you were talking about.
Everyone knows it. I mean, I was just, you know, like on my sofa, like really
just dying.
Don't stop. But yeah, I mean that's cool because there, they used the compression for, like communication and stuff like that. And that's also like a huge thing you can do with compression. And I think like a lot of people are already studying that, et cetera. I think that what we're bringing to the blockchain, so you can call it the new Pied Piper, right? or the new Pied Piper, I mean, whatever you want to call it. But I think that what we're bringing here is something that was not done before because I think no one has pinpointed the use case for it till now. And I think that once provenance and stuff like that becomes a huge issue for both artists and collectors, et cetera, and obviously like making the entire piece in one place, this would be a huge revolution in itself.
Right. Yeah. No. I agree. I and somewhere in there, I feel like there's a really good pun. So I'm gonna leave you up to that. You'll figure something out with that. I'm sure.
Okay.
And so one last question before I get you out of here. What's your favorite NFT?
So obviously I'll be a bit biased and say that my favorite is Animetas because I do believe that we're building something huge there and really aiming high. But I told you at the beginning, you said at the beginning that I told you that I don't have a CryptoPunk yet. So now I have two. And I feel that what Larva Labs did for NFTs is huge. I think that they figured out the concept so early. And I'm just in love with what they did. So I'd say those are the two winners for me.
All right, awesome. Yeah, thank you for taking the time. That's great. I really appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to everything that you're working on. For those in the audience that want to find out more about you and your projects, what are the best places for them to go?
So, shortly. So the drop for our game is on March 14th. That's the main thing, the main take from here. You can follow my Twitter account, which is CyberAge49. You can follow GM420 Labs' Twitter account, join the Discord. You can follow obviously Animeta's account and join the Discord and find amazing communities and all that. Yeah.
All right. Well, awesome. Thank you for taking the time, Cyber. I really appreciate it. And looking forward to everything that you're working on and, ready to watch you make some history. So again, thanks for the time and everyone in the audience. Thank you for listening into The Cutting Edge and we'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to The Cutting Edge. Subscribe to stay up to date on our latest episodes. To catch the show live, follow me on Twitter @GMoneyNFT and tune in every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Twitter Spaces.